Okay, good evening, everyone. We have a sponsor for tonight's shiur. Tonight's shiur is sponsored by Hal and Debbie Rubin as a schus for Refuah Shlema for Eliyahu David ben Esther and Nota Hirsch ben Chassi. So we'll have that in mind as we proceed over here. Okay. I'm not walking around just to get more steps. This is my normal, you know. Okay, so good evening, everyone. We're going, this is the first in a series of a few shiurim relating to the Chag of Hanukkah. Good evening. Relating to the Chag of Hanukkah. And this is really the foundational shiur relating to the Chag of Hanukkah. We all know that Hanukkah expresses itself ritually, primarily through the mitzvah of Hadlokas Neros. We're all familiar with the famous Gemara that when the Chashmonaim returned to the Beis HaMikdash, they can't find enough oil to light the menorah. They find enough oil for one day. There's a miracle. The oil lasts for 8 days. And so we all buy our children presents. So we all go and engage in the mitzvah of Hadlokas Neros Hanukkah. But of course, the catalyst for this entire story is really rooted in the conflict that had evolved between the Greeks and the Jewish people. So what tonight's shiur is about is trying to understand the nature of that conflict and how it is that its particular nature resulted in the miracle of Hanukkah in the way in which it's expressed as we observe it today. Hanukkah, I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, Hanukkah in every Jewish population survey ever conducted, the most commonly observed chag is Hanukkah. Amongst all Jews, when you study the full spectrum of affiliation. So there are many reasons that people have suggested as to why that's so. Perhaps its proximity to other holiday seasons is part of it. Perhaps the notion that it involves a ritual that is very easily accessible to everybody. You don't need to go to Brooklyn to bake matzahs with the guys, you know, with the headphones and the cigarettes and the L'shem Mitzvahs matz. That's not needed for Hanukkah. You don't need to go to a store and examine a citron for 2.5 hours and overpay by $48. That's not needed for Hanukkah. You don't need to involve yourself in a chauffeur. You don't need to involve yourself in cleaning your whole house. You need candles. Who doesn't love candles? People have scented candles. People love candles. So there is a certain resonance of the way in which the Chag is expressed that is very familiar and very easy, and perhaps that's one of the reasons why it's been internalized into the consciousness of the Jewish people on a different level. Or if Soloveitchik has his own approach of the everlasting Hanukkah, why it is that Hanukkah, in terms of its message, is something that resonates, the concept of Jewish identity, the notion of projecting Jewish identity. But Hanukkah is certainly a Chag that is very, very familiar and very, very widely observed in one way or the other. So the question really is, what was this battle about? What was the clash of Greece, of Yavon, and Am Yisrael, and the Jewish people? It was the decrees of Yavon that ultimately led to the uprising of the Chashmonaim. And it was that battle of the Chashmonaim and that willingness to put everything at stake to Rabim Biyad Me'atim, for a small group of people to be willing to rise up and wage battle with one of the great forces and civilizations of the day. I read in a book once that I shouldn't have been reading. There are books for youth ministries. So I used to read these books and get good stories that I would just change the characters to Yehoshua and others. So I used to use them in NCSY. So anyway, I don't know if this is a true story, but I remember in one of those books, on Daf Chaf Beis on the base, I remember that they told a story about Alexander the Great, that Alexander the Great, when he would go to conquer a city, what he would do is he would walk up to the gates of the city, and he would bring, you might have heard the story from me, so that doesn't mean it's true. So, right, so he would walk up to the gates of the city, he would gather the elders at a cliff, and he would look at the elders of the city, the people in charge of defending the city, and he would line up his soldiers at the cliff, and one by one, he would just instruct them to jump off the cliff and kill themselves. And after about 8 or 9, he looked at the commanders of the city, and he said, look, you know, my army, they're just, they're going to do whatever they have to do. They're just, they have a relentless and total absolute loyalty to myself and what it is that we're fighting for. So just simply the fear of that type of dominance was enough to overtake people. How I used that in Kiruv, I don't remember, but I'm sure it wasn't fully appropriate. So the question is, what is at the root of this conflict? And that's what I want to explore tonight. Welcome to everyone. Okay, I think we have more Makoro. If any, do we have some more on the men's sign? Maybe just share so that we can make sure everybody has. Okay, so let's talk about Yavon. Let's talk about Greece. I'd like to begin with a quote from Shamshon Raphael Hirsch. Shamshon Raphael Hirsch has a lengthy essay about Hellenism, which is the philosophical underpinnings of the Greek world. And he says the following within that essay. Hanukkah represents the clash of two doctrines, two views, two civilizations, capable of molding opinions, training and educating those who until this very day compete for the mastery of the world, Hellenism and Judaism. These are two forces whose effect upon the nations mark the historical development of mankind and which surfaced in Judea for the first time in the days of Matisyahu. Hellenism and Judaism, when examined in depth, they are the two leading forces which today again are struggling for mastery in the Jewish world. So the most important thing to know about the clash of Greece, of Yavon and Yahadus, was that it was unique in the history of the Jewish people. Up until this point, every enemy of Klal Yisrael was basically about a physical sense of clash. The Canaanim conquering Eretz Yisrael, the Babylonians. Essentially, the goal was everybody wanted to build their countries, build their societies. Everybody wanted to possess a piece of land. Everybody wanted to build their world. And there was a clash. There was a fight for power. The conflict with Yavon, with Greece, is the first time that Yahadus experiences a conflict of culture. There were, of course, idolatrous practices that were observed in the nations that would fight Klal Yisrael all the time. But those practices, the goals of that society, was not necessarily to expand that idolatry into the larger world. Rather, their goal simply was, they weren't building civilizations, they weren't building pagan civilizations. Their goal was to essentially dominate the world and control the world and have it for themselves. So it was a much more barbaric type of conflict by nature. Greece is the first stage in civilization where they begin to try to create certain cultural paradigms that survive and thrive to this day. The underpinnings of so much of our intellectual understanding of the world and the structures within which we engage the world and seek to try to comprehend the world have their antecedents in the world of Yavon and the world of Greece. The whole notion of intellectualism, of rationalism, of determinism, all these different elements of how to look at the world, the underpinnings of democracy, of how to set up societies, many sociological paradigms. There is much of the way in which society functions that is, even the whole concept of a schooling and what a university looks like, what an academy looks like, what a yeshiva looks like, many of these dimensions of human life, of human society, have their origins in the world of Yavon, in the world of Greece. So when Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch talks about the clash of two doctrines, he's not just talking about descriptively what exactly is going on. It's the notion that this is happening for the first time. This is a new challenge that the Jewish people has to contend with. A foreign ideology that we will see has certain structural commonalities with Am Yisrael and with Torah thinking, but certain key elements are antagonistic towards Torah thinking. And how does Klal Yisrael deal with that? It was always the forces of good and evil. All of the good Bible stories are the Jews fighting, waging a battle of good and evil. Here, when it comes to the world of Hanukkah, it is much more complex. And that's really what we want to try to explore. So let's begin. First, we're going to begin by trying to understand how the Chazal relate to the whole concept of wisdom from Yavon, of wisdom from Greece. So there's actually a spectrum of, yes.
what does Rav Shasha Chodesh add to what we understood before?
He is conceptualizing what the Gemara presents as a military conflict. When you look at the general Hanukkah story, there is a military battle and there is a miracle of the oil. He is conceptualizing the conflict as not being rooted in a military conflict. That was an outcome of a much, much greater ideological, cultural, existential conflict. Well, before him, it wasn't formulated in that way. We will see that that there are certainly allusions to it. So, and he certainly formulates it very, very well. So Hellenism and Judaism, when examined in depth, they're the two leading forces which today, again, are struggling for mastery in the Jewish world. And that certainly speaks to his historical context, obviously, and his trying to preserve a sense of orthodoxy against the winds of Haskalah. Okay, so the Mishnah tells us in Sota, Bepulmos shel Titus, in the aftermath of the Battle of Titus, Gazra Atros Kalos, they made sort of gezeros, decrees related to certain decorative aspects of the wedding ceremony. V'shelo yilamed Adam es bino Yevonis. And the other gezera they made is that one is not permitted to educate their children in Greek culture, in Greek understanding. So that reflects certainly a very hostile attitude towards the world of Yavon. Let's look at the next Gemara. The next Gemara is the Gemara in Menachos, Ansari Tes, Amid Beis. The Gemara is discussing the mitzvah of the Lechem Aponim. The Lechem Aponim was the showbread that was put on the Shulchan, in the Mishkan, and in the Beis HaMikdash. So there's a discussion in the Gemara whether or not that Lechem had to exist, had to be present on the Shulchan continuously. It definitely could not be absent for the period of a day. The Gemara has a discussion. Does it have to be present continuously and it never could be off? Or it has to be there in the beginning of the day and it has to be there in the end of the day? But what happens in the middle is not necessarily our concern. So the Gemara says, Tanya Rabbi Yossi Amar Afilu Silikas Yishana Shachris of Sidur Zachadosha Arvis and Mekach Klum, as long as it's at the beginning at the end. Elamani Mekayim Lefonai Tomid. So then what does it mean that it has to be Lechem Ponim Lefonai Tomid? That's what the Pasuk says. Shelo Yolin Shulchan below Lechem. That the Shulchan shouldn't go to sleep, so to speak, without bread put on the Shulchan. Amar Rav Ami Midvarav Shrabi Yossi Nilmot. What do we see from the words of Rabbi Yossi? Afilu lo shana adam, ela perak echad shachris, uperak echad arvis. Even if a person only studies Torah, the Shulchan as a metaphor for the study of Torah, a little bit in the morning and a little bit at night, kaye mitzvah, he fulfills the mitzvah, lo yomosh es sefer atorah azemi picha, that the Torah should never leave your mouth. And we know the next phrase of the pasuk, v'hi gisa bo yomam v'layla, and you have to immerse yourself in it both day and night. So what does that mean, immerse yourself in day and night? Does that mean that you have to be continuously studying Torah? Or does that mean that a person has to study Torah once in the daytime and once in the nighttime, not allowing a full period to pass? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan Meshum Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, afilu lo kara adam ela kriyashma shachris ve'arvis, kayim lo yomush, if a person only reads kriyashma, which is a text of Talmud Torah in the context of Tefillah. If a person only reads Kriya Shma, so we have Ava Rabba right before Kriya Shma, Shel Shachris, which has some of the elements of Birchas HaTorah. So if a person only reads Kriya Shma in the morning and in the nighttime, they would be Yotzei their mitzvah of Yigisa Bo Yomam Valayla. Right? This would not be quoted at a Kollel dinner. Not at all. Right? V'dobar zeh Aser La'omro Bifnei Amaya Aretz. Says the Gemara, but you don't want to tell this to any of the Amei Ha'aretz, right? Because what are they going to do? They're going to figure, I don't have to devote myself and commit myself to ongoing substantial Torah learning, a little bit in the morning, a little bit at night. The Rava Amar Mitzvah LaOmro. Rava takes a different perspective, and this is for another time. Bifnei Amei Ha'aretz. No, don't treat people with sort of like this infantilized attitude, where you sort of say, you know, let's not tell them about the way, you know, about how they could cut corners. Rather, let's take into account the fact that many people struggle tremendously with such a substantial, overwhelming commitment of Talmud Torah. Let's at least secure their commitment to the minimal expectations. And that's just a fascinating Gemara in general of how do you approach sort of public policy when it comes to to educate people. So fine. Shol ben Doma ben Achoso Rabbi Yishmael is Rabbi Yishmael. So ben Doma, the ben Achoso of Rabbi Yishmael, asks Rabbi Yishmael, Kagon ani, what about me? Shalomadati kol ha-Torah kul. I have finished kol ha-Torah kul. I finished the entire Torah. Now, remember, this is the time of the Gemara. So, obviously that means they finished the Chumash, and they finished the Mishnah, and they finished the Gemara, at least Menachos, up to Tzadites, right? Obviously, they did the Rambam, because, you know, somehow there was a Rambam. But we don't know exactly, right? There was probably some art school books, whatever it is. What do I do now? Mahu lilmod chachmas yivonis. Can I learn Greek philosophy? Can I learn elements of secular knowledge, of Greek knowledge? So the Gemara says, Kara alav hamikra hazeh, lo yomush sefer Torah hazeh mipicha v'yigisa bo yomam v'layla. So he says, absolutely you can, no problem. The Torah tells us that you have to immerse yourself in Talmud Torah, v'yigisa bo yomam v'layla, day and night. Tseyu baduk, go find the time, sha'a she'ena lo min hayom, v'lo min halayla, v'lamud bo chachmas yivonis. Beautiful. Find a time that is not the day and not the night. I have seen such times, right? Find a time of day that's not the day and not the night, and that's the time that you can devote to Chachmas Yevanis, right? So that doesn't seem consistent with the YU schedule or the Lander schedule. So, Upliga de Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, argues Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Pasuk Zen, lo chova, lo mitzvah, lo bracha. He has a different interpretation of that Pasuk, that Pasuk is not a chova, it's rather just a bracha to Yoshua. So again, we see an indication from Chazal that there is resistance to immersion in the world of Chachmas Yevanis. There is something about Greek knowledge and Greek culture and elements of Yavan that Chazal are trying to restrain us from. Tosos and Yimenachos, in source number 4, actually questions on another daf, where the Gemara says, Ar Adam Asher Yilmod Es Beno Chachmas Yevanis, where the Gemara indicated some sort of curse for somebody who teaches their children Chachmas Yevanis. So Tosis quotes our Gemara and basically suggests the following question. It seems from our Gemara that the problem is not fundamentally with Chachmas Yevanis. The problem is it's Bittul Torah. The problem is you only have a certain amount of time per day to devote to intellectual pursuits. We have a corpus of wisdom that we are supposed to be committed to in our intellectual pursuits, and that is the study of Torah. So since that obligation is continuous, therefore it doesn't leave any opportunity, doesn't leave any opening to study Chachmas Yevanis. That's very different than suggesting that the Chachma itself, there's something about the knowledge itself that is problematic and antithetical to fundamental Torah values. That's the question that Tosos raises. And Tosos provides a very interesting answer. If you look about 8 or 9 lines down, which is Lo Yomush in the beginning of the line, Mashma, Dishari, Hainu Hecha, De'ika Tzorech, De'shema Hayakarov L'malchus. So Tosos suggests that maybe when we say that really it's mutter to study, it's just it shouldn't be your priority, because your priority should be the study of Torah, that's not suggesting an alternative viewpoint in Chazal that that supports the study of Chachmas Yevanis, but rather it is suggesting that if somebody's in a situation where they are representing the Jewish people publicly, or they are in some sort of diplomatic role, and knowing and understanding these ideas is vital in order for them to be able to accomplish what they need to accomplish, so then it is entirely permissible. And even though that's not really the topic of our shir tonight, when you begin to look at the various makoros with regards to studying secular knowledge in general, and the traditions begin to sort of break off into different approaches, so some approaches view all secular knowledge, unless it's absolutely core to the understanding of a particular Torah principle, all secular knowledge is essentially outside the bounds of divine, you know, Torah understanding, and therefore should be avoided. And some will suggest that, no, you can study secular knowledge, but only from a utilitarian perspective. In other words, you could study what you need. what you need, and this Tosis is one of the sources of that concept. You could study what you need in order to earn a parnasa, in order to be able to function in the world, in order to be able to, right? As opposed to other approaches that see perhaps inherent value in secular wisdom that could be enriching in life itself. So there is a spectrum of approaches to that question and that issue, and that's not our core issue, but it is raised by Tosis. So we already see a little bit of a chink in the armor, but there is that's the notion. What is Chochmas Yevonis? So the Shita Mikubetzes in Baba Kama quotes the Rama. The Rama says that Chochmas Yevonis refers to Chozim B'Kochavim Modiyim L'Chadoshim, refers to basically astrology, that the Greeks were very into astrology, and one should not necessarily study astrology. The Me'iri then quotes the Me'iri, who says that this is really about Greek philosophy, right? Aristotle, Plato, these people. Chachmas Yevanis, Asura Lilamda, Ibnei Shemosheches Libo Shel Adam, because it pulls the heart of a person, the Horeses Harbe Mifnos Adas Vikruve Malchus Shelohem Mitzad Shem Tzrichem Ba L'Kama Dvarim Dechsise Malchim. So he basically says, in general, this is not something that people should do. It pulls your heart away from focusing on our religion. Perhaps it could resonate in certain ways. I remember when that movie, The Passion, came out, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And Rabbi Weinreb wrote a very strong article, or he gave a speech, that everyone was discussing, can Jews go see The Passion? Is that appropriate? Is that not appropriate? A lot of people wanted to see it because I think the characters spoke in Aramaic. Mm-hmm. People were very curious what exactly that looked like. I didn't personally see it because it's not a comedy. But the... But they were discussing. So Rabbi Weinreb was very, very concerned about how good of a job the film did in building the emotional sort of momentum of the entire story that it was telling, and that it could shake not necessarily people's faith factually, because everybody understands we're coming from a different perspective in how we view these events. But sometimes when you expose yourself to certain foreign ideas, if those ideas are presented in a very, very compelling way, whether that's intellectual or emotional or any other way there, or, you know, so that could affect a person. That's what the Meiri is saying. Then he says the Krovei Malchus, they can do what they need to do in order to understand what they can understand so that they can contend with their counterparts in the world. But he writes that even the Tamanei Chachamim, you know, Ba'afa Chachamim Ashleimim, Shekvar Malu Kresam Basavayayin, even though Chachamim who have filled their stomachs with meat and wine, as a metaphor for a Torah, Rata Lomar HaTorah V'Talmuda V'Sodos Motzoseah Ein La Krovim L'Malchus Yoser Me'em V'Hainemar B'Malach Yomlichu Mutulam L'Lamda K'dil Hoshev Aleim L'Chazeku Misparam Lo Yimo. Says they can study it so that they can understand it, so that they could refute it. So again, you see already some alternative voices. There's some very strong Makoros. Horror. This should not be done ever. There's already now some sense of, you know, perhaps for the purpose of more pragmatic considerations of diplomacy, those kinds of things. And then maybe even, he doesn't use the phrase Dam ala Hoshev, because I don't think he's talking from a tactical perspective, like, oh, you have to go answer questions about biblical criticism, so go study what it is. But from a larger perspective, that the Chachamim have to be able to provide people guidance in how to think and how to approach things. And if they don't understand the alternatives that people are exposed to, they won't be able to speak intelligently about even what we believe. And so already you begin to see that there's some sort of understanding. The Sifri in Ve'ez Chanon frames it a little differently as well. On the pasuk of Vidibarta Bam, in the next line, he says, Shalot Ta'arev Behem Dvarim. So Vidibarta Bam, you should speak words of Torah, and you should not mix in other foreign ideas with those words of Torah. Shalot Tomar Lamarati Chachmas Yisrael Elech Ve'elmod Chachmas Umas Olam. Shouldn't say, I learned Chachmas Yisrael, so now I'm going to go and learn Chachmas Umas Olam. Dr. Blitzstein, in his article that appears in a very important book that focuses on this issue very extensively, called I'll remember the name of the book in a moment. It's got a number of different articles by David Berger and Rabbi Schachter and Rabbi Lichtenstein and others. So he reflects on this source and he says the following, and this is just an important point for us. The terminology used here is itself revealing. Phrases like wisdom of Israel and the wisdom of other nations are not commonplace and also seem to be circuitous ways of referring to Torah and secular knowledge. The significant point is not, I think, the contrast drawn between the origins of one type of wisdom against the origins of another, as though national loyalty is at issue, meaning it's not that you're studying knowledge that emanates from one source versus studying knowledge that emanates from another source. We ought to note, rather, that these phrases are part of a quotation. This is how the individual who wishes to study the non-Judaic materials presents his program. In other words, it's not the Sifri, it's a different reading of the Sifri. The Sifri is not instructive in what you can study and what you can't study. The Sifri is referring to a person's particular outlook and particular perspective and particular disposition towards studying those types of things, and therefore characterizes it in a certain way. And what's the problem with what they do? The problem is they equivocate the two. They do not say that there's Torah and there's Chochmas Umas HaOlam. There's no hierarchy. There's no priority. But rather, there's a sense of balance. So we're not referring, the Sifri is not instructing a person, you can never learn Chochmas Yevanis. Not that you can never learn Chochmas Yevanis. But if your attitude is to equate Chochmas Yisrael to Chochmas Yevanis, then your particular philosophical makeup is very, very tenuous, and that's dangerous in exposing yourself to these types of issues, and therefore that's not what we would do. This gets a little more, yes.
The Rambam
in Mora Nevuchim, which I did not include in the sources because I didn't get so much into the Rishonim. In the Rishonim, Rashi seems to be very, Rashi seems to be very restrictive in approaching Chachmas Yevanis. The Rambam, as we know, not only explicitly states in Mora Nevuchim that studying these ideas is important for refining the intellect of a human being, which the Rambam sees as basically our purpose in life. But the Rambam quotes Aristotle and others extensively in his works, and that's really a whole nother topic, how to handle that and how to understand why he was doing that, what the Mora Nevuchim was really, what its purpose was. Was it written as a independent sefer of philosophy, intended to sort of put out there a program of philosophical thought for everyone? Or was it sort of, somewhat of a reaction to something? And that itself is its own conversation. The Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah begins to take us in a little bit more of a more negative direction. V'choshech, says the Medrash, ze golos yavon. And the Megillas Tainis has the famous statement that on Ches Teves, Nichtva Torah Yevanis Meitame Amelech VaChoshech Bo LeOlam Shloshes Yamim. That on the eighth day of Teves, the Torah was translated into Greek. That's also its own discussion, the Septuagint, which is our Greek translation of the Torah. That happened in the days of Talmi HaMelech, King Ptolemy, and that's when darkness came to the world. So you definitely see amongst Chazal certainly a certain sense of restraint and a certain sense of pulling back. What about the counter voice? So the counter voice really begins in Bereishis, in Perek Tes. The Torah tells us, we just finished the story of Noach engaging in the behavior that was not appropriate. Noach had three sons. Cham was the one that instigated this whole story that was not appropriate. And Shem and Yefes, his other two sons, were the ones that cover up Noach. In reacting to this whole thing, so Vayomer Oror Kenan Eved Avodim Yu Le'achav, Vayomer Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem, V'Kenan Eved Lamo, Yafte Elokim LeYefes V'Yishkon Be'Olei Shem. Hashem will give beauty to Yefes, and he will dwell in the house of Shem. So what does that mean? The Gemara in Megillah tells us that Rav Shem Gamliel Omer, Af Besvarim Lo Itiru, She'Yichtavu Ela Yevanis. that it is permissible. One is not supposed to write Sifrei Torah or Sfarim in general in any other language other than the Ksav of Hebrew, with one exception, the exception of Greek, the exception of Yevanis. And Rashi says, Hu lashon yavan lashono yafe, mishal kol b'nei yefes. So there's a little bit of a tension in Chazal. There's a little bit of a, on one hand, we have certain aspects of Greek thought and Greek philosophy that Chazal seem to be very antagonistic towards. And on the other hand, there seems to be somewhat of an understanding that the two could be brought together under certain circumstances. Let's just talk about for a moment what exactly is wrong with these Greek ideas. What exactly is the problem? So the Ramban in Sefer Vayikra, so we'll just look at a number of different possibilities. The Ramban in Sefer Vayikra says the following. The Ramban says, what's wrong with Chochmas Yevanis? What's the problem with Chochmas Yevanis? So the Ramban says, V'inyan mevuar, in the third line, Zulasi imtachkor ma'inyan l'sichlim ha'nivdolim l'ruchos bekarbon, v'zeyadua beruchos, v'yadua gam b'schelim, b'ramzei ha'torah l'mudum sodom l'och l'faresh. It goes on to basically explain the problem with Greek thought is its obsessive focus on rationalism. That in Greek philosophy, everything comes down to what is rationally assumed. And that is the apex of human understanding and of existence in the world. Everything can be brought into rational understanding. Anything that cannot be brought into rational understanding is out of the orbit of what is relevant and what is important and what is central and what is even real to human civilization. The Maharal frames it a little bit differently. The Maharal tells us in source number 13, V'yisbar ki malchus yavan hu muchan lihisnage liyisrael. In what way is malchus yavan contrary to the ideals of Klal Yisrael? B'mashi yesh lehem Torah u'mitzvos elokim. That Klal Yisrael has Torah and mitzvos of God. Ki el malchus zu shayich lo hachachma shi seichel ha'adam bilvad. In other words, that Greek culture, and this is part of why this became so complex, when we were dealing with nations that were polytheistic and that were idolatrous and that were pagan, it was very clear that we stood in total distinction to them. The separation was clear. In Greek culture, where the worship is of the rational mind and the human being, so there are many elements of Yahadus that incorporate and integrate those notions into how we live and how we think and how we understand things and how we analyze things. So the resonance of these ideas, so in their extreme formulation, which is how they were manifest in the context of Greek thought, so they were antithetical to Jewish ideas. But once you remove them from that context, and you just looked at them sort of in the abstract, or you applied them to situations that you were involved in, they resonated tremendously, which is why we ended up with so many Jewish Hellenists, because these ideas made sense. It's like if someone told you that Christians came and set up the United States of America, and they're the ones that set up Thanksgiving, and so therefore you shouldn't keep Thanksgiving because it came from Christians, because there was a Christian idea, you would say, putting aside the chukasakum question for the moment, what would you respond to that? You would say, that's ridiculous, right? The core values that are celebrated in the context of this holiday resonate tremendously with us. Of course, we have a Korban Toda. We have a concept of a Koras HaTov. We have a Koras. This isn't a pagan. This isn't like someone saying we have a holiday that acknowledges the godliness of the sun. So no one would say, oh, you know what? If we're off on that holiday, we should all get together and have a meal and eat something and sun-dried tomatoes and sacrifice them to the gods of whatever. No one would think to do that because it obviously has pagan overtones, right? That's why Halloween becomes such a discussion. When I used to run NCSY, we used to have on Halloween, we used to have Halloween, and we would make challah that night with all the kids. And then, because none of these kids were religious, they all went trick or treating. So then we taught them that the difference between Purim and Halloween is that Purim and Halloween are very similar. The difference is that on Halloween, you knock on people's doors and you say, "Give me candy." Now, Purim, you knock on people's doors and you say, We're here to give you. We're here to, you to give you candy. So what we did was we made Halloween trick-or-treat Purim baskets. They were all orange and they had challahs in them. And we told the kids that whenever they went trick-or-treating and they showed up at a Jewish home with a mezuzah, instead of asking for candy, they should tell them that they're, you know, they want to extend as a gesture of community, and they're giving them this challah. Okay, so I'm not encouraging that in Passaic, but that's what we did. So the notion that there was tremendous resonance of these ideas to regular people, and they became integrated into their thinking. And without the sophistication and nuance of being able to distinguish when is the Greek philosophical construct parallel to a Torah philosophical construct, and when is the Greek philosophical construct hostile to a Torah construct, people became very confused, and people began to identify with this way of thinking. So the Maharal says, what's the distinguishing factor? They believe in total intellectual independence. We also believe in the focus on the intellect. We also believe on the importance of learning and study and understanding. That's at the core of who we are and what we're about. It's part of what the menorah represents. Concept of Torah Shu'al Peh. We don't even believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu just handed the whole thing to us. We believe that we have a role to play in the development of Torah and its application to modern day life. So we have those values. We have those concepts. So in what way do we diverge? The manner in which we diverge is not in the value of intellectualism and rationalism, but it's in its absolutist character. That in the world of Greece, that is the beginning, middle, and the end. And in the world of Torah, obviously there are parameters that are set. At some point, we surrender to the wisdom of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. If we were constructing Hilchos Avelus, just to borrow an example from Rabbi Soloveitchik, if we were constructing Hilchos Avelus, and we were trying to decide, well, what do we do if someone, God forbid, loses somebody on Erev Pesach, and there's going to be a Chag right away? Would we construct it in such a way that there would be no Shiva whatsoever? Of course we wouldn't. We would say, all the reasons why everybody else needs Shiva, this person needs Shiva. It's cathartic, it's communal support, it is a healthy way to internalize the values of the person we've lost. It's all of the dimensions of the experience of Avelus that resonate with the human experience. We wouldn't want to curtail that from anybody. Yet, Halacha dictates, with an absolute finality, that if somebody is buried on Erev Yontif, that Shiva is completely terminated. We have no rational understanding of why that would be so. We have a halachic construct that is a limud from Maseches Mo'ikot, Nasi Yaseh D'Rabim, V'Dochi Yaseh D'Yachid, but we have no rational understanding for that, yet, in the words of Rabbi Soloveitchik, we surrender to that aspect of halach. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Kach Gazarti. That's how it's going to work. So we understand that intellectualism and rationalism is very much part of what animates our religious life and our religious thinking, but there is a certain point at which we do not understand. We don't understand. Just saying that God said so doesn't mean we understand it. It means that we let it go. We have chukim. We don't understand how the Parah Aduma works. We don't understand why all things that the Torah prohibits, it prohibits. We can give tamei mitzvos. We can try to ascribe reasons to things, but certain things exceed the power of our intellectual comprehension. The world of Yavan begins and ends the human experience with what is comprehensible. And so therefore, that, says the Maharal, is where we diverge from the world of Yavan, from the world of Greece. And you could see how Chazal would have to struggle in terms of trying to articulate what the approach should be. Because to ban it completely and banish it completely is almost superfluous, it's almost impossible, because it is so much part of the natural human condition. There's so many elements of this that speak to the human experience. But to allow it to be observed and connected to in the framework of Chachmas Yevanis is also very dangerous, because if you get sucked into these ideas in a more fundamentalist way, then there's no space to anchor oneself in the world of Yahadus. The Pachad Yitzchak, Rav Huttner, goes on to explain that the core problem with Chachmas Yevanis is all of this rationalism and all of this reductionism essentially leads one to the very, very dangerous philosophy of determinism. Determinism means that you could essentially break down the entire human experience to its independent individual factors that cause things to happen, and everything ultimately is predetermined. The determinism becomes part of psychology, becomes part of philosophy, it becomes part of science, it becomes part of the very fundamentals of a lot of things that we relate to. However, this is extremely contradictory to the fundamental principles of Yahadus, because for us, Bechira is at the heart of everything. Right? Bechira is at the heart of Schar V'Onesh. Bechira is at the heart of what it means to have Jewish history unfold as a result of the behavior of Am Yisrael. Bechira is at the, is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us into the world. Bechira is man to make choices, is why we're here, to choose between good and evil, and to make decisions. And so therefore, says the Maharal, even though there are certain aspects of determinism that one can see in the world, wow, these principles of science accurately predict these phenomenon, Yahadus believes that that's only true up until a point. And that's, by the way, just a little, that's, by the way, one of the reasons why the Nes of Chanukah had to entail something that was miraculous in the world of Teva, in the world of nature itself. In other words, why was that such an important miracle? There's so many questions about that whole miracle, whether or not it was needed altogether, because we have the principle of Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur, whether or not, if you can't find the oil and you don't have enough for enough days, you don't have it, you don't have it, you don't have it. We don't have the menorah's oil today. No one's freaking out, right? It's not, it is what it is. We don't have it, we don't have it. So they walk into the Beis HaMikdash, not going to have the menorah. You look at God and you say, look, God, you let these people in, you let them trash the Beis HaMikdash, they got rid of all the oil, we have enough for one day, we'll put it in, we'll be done. I mean, there are a lot of questions on why this miracle was so paramount, was so necessary, was so compelling. But when you take a step back and you realize that part of the core battle that was being fought by the Chashmonaim against the ideology of both the Greeks and the Hellenized Jews was this notion that there are no miracles, that everything is predetermined, that God does not have a active role in shaping Jewish history, then you understand why a violation of the principles of nature is so much part and parcel of what it is that we're trying to define as the Jewish identity relative to the world of Yavan. That's the Pachad Yitzchak. Rav Shashavar Ersh talks about Hellenism considers human reason as having been created to comprehend the truth. At the same time, human reason is considered to be the initiator, revealer, discloser of the giver of truth. So again, it depends. It is evident in the history of the human thought, which has been searching for wisdom in the Hellenistic spirit for close to 3,000 years. So again, the question is, what are you looking for? Are you looking for an independent, compelling, rational, systematic truth? Or are you looking for the source of all that truth, which is what Klal Yisrael is about, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So, of course we're thought-central, and we're thought-minded, and rational-central, and rational-minded, but everything has an ultimate source. So just to kind of bring us to a close, there are a few more makoros that I encourage you to take a look at on your own from Rav Hirsch, and that is the following, that part of the point of Chanukah is for us to, every single year, re-engage the world of Yavan. Why do we have to re-engage the world of Yavan? Because the world of Yavan is constantly in our orbit. There are many aspects of our lives, and many structures of human society, which have their antecedents in the world of Yavan, in the world of Greece. So saying that we're just going to completely, that these are the forces of darkness, and we're the forces of light, and Chanukah is about vanquishing every aspect of this and having nothing to do with it and constructing an entirely independent and totally unrelated system of how we look at society and humanity, that is not really what Chanukah is about. What Chanukah is about is recognizing the complexity of the world of Yavan, is not allowing ourselves to just essentially say, look, it is what it is, but to recognize that it's complex, that it's nuanced, that it's challenging, that it's difficult, but nevertheless, that can't erode the sense of conviction and certitude that we know who we are and we know what we're about. And by the way, that's part of why that explains a lot of things about Chanukah. That's part of why Chanukah has no Kedushas Hayom. It's very interesting. You have this beautiful Chag of 8 days long with Hallel, full Hallel. There's no Isser Malacha. You're allowed to just, you could do whatever you want. You could drive wherever you want. You could do whatever type of melacha you want. Why didn't Chazal institute any sort of Kedusha Sayom, even Midirabbanon, for the Chag of Chanukah? And one of the reasons is because the whole point of Chanukah is not to extract yourself from the world into this isolated world of Kedusha. It's to live the day-to-day world. It's to engage the forces of Yefes. We didn't discuss it so much yet. We'll discuss it more next week. The world of beauty and all these different elements of society and of the world and of the human experience. But to do so with the absolute conviction of this is the Derech HaYahadus. This is what our dogmatic beliefs are. And this is why it's so important. And that sense of pride and that sense of projection to the rest of the world. And that's what the Gemara is telling us. The Gemara says that this is the experience of Chanukah. That yes, the Chashmonaim walk in to the Beis HaMikdash, everything is essentially overturned, but the Beis HaMikdash is not destroyed, because that's what Yavan is. Yavan is, there's a presence here, there's a presence of these ideas, but it doesn't completely, it doesn't destroy the essence of what it is. Adarabba, it becomes confusingly part of it. And part of what Chanukah is about, and that's what the Gemara says, and the Gemara says, my Chanukah, the part of what the Gemara is about is to search, is to clean out, is to try to compartmentalize and create structures and understandings. This is what secular thinking is, and this is what a Torah Hashkafa thinking is. And that's what the illumination of the menorah is all about. Chanukah is a chag of conviction in what we believe, in who we are, in our identity, in how we understand ourselves, even in a world that is incredibly complex and incredibly nuanced, and it can't possibly be more relevant than it is today. We live in such an incredibly complicated world, and it's not a world that anybody anymore can just say they're going to remove themselves from and completely encapsulate themselves and isolate themselves from all foreign influences and secular ideas. It's just no longer possible. Even if you build your own, what is it, Palm City, New York, whatever it's called now, right? Even if you build your own, mamish your own city, you're still subject to some influences, to some infiltrations of these ideas. Chanukah is about acknowledging that reality and summoning the sense of conviction and idealism and understanding and clarity to be able to cut through it with a perspective of what Yahadus ultimately is about. Okay, we'll see everyone next week.